Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons. I'm a Master Certified Life Coach and an energy healer. I'm joined today with Raslyn Wooten. Raslyn is an award-winning global public relations, experiential, and brand marketing strategist. She is the founder of JobMinder 365, the first ever mobile career documentation app, and Notable, an online career magazine for Black women. She has over 18 years experience coaching and advising executives, influencers, and celebrities in crisis communication, employee relations, image and style, experiential events, cultural initiatives, and social responsibility. Raslyn built high-profile public relations and brand campaigns for iHeartRadio, Target, U.S. Bank, and Invesco. Currently, she partners with clients in various industries, including retail, film, fashion, music, law, culture, finance, health, and tech. She is a BA from Charles Sturt University, NSW, Australia, and attended the School of Communications at Howard University in Washington, D.C. She enjoys art, music, fashion, film, books, design, travel, taking naps, and memes. Yes, naps. She splits her time with family between Houston, Minneapolis, and Panama City, Panama. Raslyn, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Amy.
You know what I got when I read crisis communication? And tell me if you hate this, but I'm getting like Olivia Pope vibes.
People say that all the time. It's not as sexy, but yes, I get that all the time from family and friends. Because when I have to explain what I do, you know, and in Panama, they'll say, what do you do? And I say, you know, publicista. And then they think publishing books. That's the first thing people think of. They don't think of me like writing, crafting messaging, writing speeches, helping people get out of trouble, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, it's the same job, but it's just totally not as sexy. Like my clothes aren't as fabulous and, you know, I'm not with the president who's sexy. And
did you see the DNC? And then I have a dear friend in Michigan where the whole scandal cast came to a rally.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that. People are like, do their spouses care at all? You know,
because they're like, the chemistry is.
Yeah, the chemistry is insane.
My friend was actually there and met the whole cast. I was like, oh.
I think because too, public relations is very intimate. I don't think people see, like, people have to tell you the truth so that you can craft the right messaging.
Yeah.
It's an area of business that I think a lot of small businesses and companies overlook, like the real function of it, but it's really to craft your outside public image. What is your image to the public, to the industry, to your employees? There's so many ways to look at it, and every company focuses on different things, but it makes the job better when people tell you the truth, because then you can say, okay, now, if we're saying this, it's not a lie, right? But we probably don't have to tell everything today.
So in my line of work in energy healing, I already feel it. So a person, it's hard for someone to not tell me what's going on. But two things that come in as you said that. So one, why do you think people are so afraid? I'll go back to the show. Always they start working with a client and then something surfaces. I feel like that's it in life. We've gotten into such a place where we are penalized, not for doing the thing and not rewarded for coming forward about doing the thing.
I agree with that.
So it's like such fear, no matter who it is.
But I think there is a lot of fear, but I think a lot of it is generational, right? So I'm at that really funny age. I think there's like this little cusp of us where we're not millennial, it's something else. But anyway, it's like I'm born in 1979, right? So I still had a house phone. I played outside, but we also had a computer. I had a cell phone. You know, my dad had a car phone. I had a cell phone in college. So we kind of bridge like this little, there's this gap of us where if the things we had done were on social media, we probably wouldn't have had the careers that we did, right? But then you take like my nieces and nephews, and my son is like 21, he'll be 22. He grew up online. Like he grew up on Snapchat and Twitch and all these other things that I don't know anything about.
I don't even know what Twitch is.
Yeah, but had to learn about, because I had to see like, what is my son seeing in terms of messaging? What is he putting out there? He was getting banned. So I don't know what he was doing, but cursing someone out on the NBA 2K or something, you know, Oh, you know, but I think that they're less afraid. Like, even for me, having to post like for myself, I never did. I've always reposted other people's things because, like you, I work for myself. And, you know, if someone else is talking about the same thing, why am I going to redo it? I'll just post their video, you know, and get them the likes and have somebody go back to their website and help them out. That's how I look at it. And recently, my social media person was like, you're kind of going to have to tell like your story. And like, you know, you sued your employer, your documentation was so good that you won. And that's why you have this app and all these things. And I'm like, I can't do that. And I think it's a fear for me, even though I can tell the truth, right? So imagine if I was hiding something or I had this shame. And I think that on one hand, like it's, shame is terrible, but on the other hand, there are instances where I wish we would bring shame back just a little bit because I think we know way too much about people sometimes. And I think that it stops things from being special. Like, you know, we have this saying that kindness is so rare that people think it's flirting. And it's because there's just so much going on all the time that people, you know, what's normal is no longer normal.
So the past 2 years, and I will have left my traumatic work experience, my last one, 2 years next week. And I have actually, like the moment I left, I had a little bit of nerves for the first 6 months because I knew, and this is probably my own assumption, but I knew there were a lot of eyes on me from my former world. Like, what's she gonna do next? What's going on? What's happening? Because I was the one that I said, today's my last day, and that's it. And you just don't do that. So I knew there's a lot of eyes on me. So I had a lot of nerves about what I would post. And then one day, like 6 months after I left, I ripped the Band-Aid off and I went in
You
on,
did?
oh, on LinkedIn. I just unabashedly told my truth. And from that moment forward, I am the one that'll poke the bear on LinkedIn. I stir the pot, not in a way where I'm being dramatic. I'm out here saying the things that people are skirting around, and with the hopes. And I get a lot, so many DMs about like when I tell my story, or when I'm like unabashed about something. For instance, I'm not bashful about going out and saying our workplace on average in the US and world is still rooted in white supremacy, patriarchy, capitalism, colonialism. Even saying that, people come in my DMs and be like, whoa, I've never seen anyone say that on LinkedIn, like out in the comments, like out in the wild. And I'm like, yeah, that's how I vibe and that's how I move these days. Because I work for myself, because I own my own business, I build my own life and business around who I unabashedly am. And my clients know that. I'm not afraid. I actually love a good unfollow or connection removed. I love that. Kudos to you. I help people beautifully self-select into or out of my orbit. And that means that I won't ever have to forsake myself to work with you. So I actually, I'm like, I don't believe we're a good fit, but I'm happy to connect you with someone that would be a
Oh, I
great
do that all the time. And I used to do that with dating. I'd say we're not a good match. And I got that from my mother. She'd be like, she'll tell people like, I don't even want to continue this conversation. Thank you. And like get up and leave a meeting. Like she does not care.
So that used to not be me. Like I was the one who always contorted to make sure the other person was comfortable, and that's just not how I move anymore.
Is that surprising to the people around you when you made this adjustment, I guess we'll call it?
Yeah, it led to the release of almost everyone around me. I say that cautiously. They didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I just began moving differently. So my life looks completely different. The people, places, and things around me look completely different. And it's such a mirror to show me how far I had gone into my mask or into someone that wasn't me. So the next question I wanted to ask you, I have like a visceral response, like a when someone says executive presence or personal brand. Here's why. Because energetically, again, I felt that for me, when I was in corporate for almost 20 years, executive presence meant I needed to show up in a way that made that executive in front of me comfortable. To me, that's what the executive presence meant, like depending on who the executive was, which made me come out of myself. And then personal brand, here's where I struggle. It's like, yes, I understand that there's an external perception about me and my business. And also, I'm not interested in curating that necessarily. I'm interested in it building itself through my own words and aura and personality. Can you help me through like why there's like an ickiness? And I think it's tied to my corporate life.
Probably have a little PTSD.
Yeah.
To, you know, but I think that when you work with executives, depending on the corporate climate, like they treat them like they're celebrities, like you know, don't make them angry, or, you know, you're not supposed to talk to them in the elevator if you're in the elevator with someone. I mean, I remember I was at one of the corporations and a friend of mine who is mixed race or presents mixed race or black, whatever. I don't know how she would define herself, maybe probably black at this point. But I remember her telling me this a story. They had gone to some meeting and this executive had been in the meeting, or she knew this, you know, had been in meetings with this person, and they found themselves in the elevator together. And I guess she, I don't know, talked to the guy. I don't know what she just didn't feel like it was anything crazy or inappropriate or, you know. And he went back to some people and said, you know, who does she think she is? Like striking up conversation with me about whatever it was or whatever. And she ended up like he didn't want to work with her anymore. Like it was this big thing. Like she ended up getting, you know, snatched out of, you know, the marketing area and put somewhere else. And I say that to say that I think it really depends on that company. For me, like when I worked in banking and investments, I thought that that would be worse than working in retail the way that I did, but they were actually more laid back. I think especially like US Bank was like, at the time, their CEO, his name was Richard. He was like, you called him Richard. And if he met you one time, he would remember you. He had this really crazy, uncanny ability. If he met you, Amy, and you told him something about yourself, the next time he saw you, he'd be like, so have you, you know, been around any auras lately that you, you know, I mean, he could,
awesome.
There was, you know, tens of thousands of us, right?
Yeah.
But so his company, at least in the areas that I supported, they were so down to earth. Like we had a guy who was an investor, portfolio manager guy, and he made beer on the sideline. And we, you know, he got in this magazine for his beer making. Like some companies wouldn't let you do that. They weren't like that. And that honestly was one of my best work experiences that I've ever had.
That's cool. And that's where I feel like I never want to squash anyone's zone of genius who works on, and this might be some of your zone of genius, crafting a personal brand, crafting these messages. And the masses, because of the way a lot of toxic workplace cultures have presented, personal brand and executive presence has caused people to force themselves out of their unique brilliance into someone else's, which has come to everyone being conditioned that to get ahead or to meet your goals, you exert power and control over everyone else to conform to you.
Yeah.
That's going deep. I mean, I don't know that it's that deep, but like, that's how I feel about personal brand and executive presence. And I think it just depends, to your point, it depends on the company, the executive, the person.
Yeah. I think that, you know, look, at the end of the day, we're all people, right? I've always felt like I've had a successful career, right? But I have had bosses that tried to bully me because they were jealous and inadequate. And it would have been proven because I've been documenting for my whole life. Because as a publicist, when I first started, they used to tell us you have to save everything for 7 years. So remember now, when I first started in this business, that's what I was told by a mentor. So I had everything. I mean, everything, right? So I think that, you know, I have always approached it like, you have value and I have value. I'm really, really good at what I do. I'm sure you're really, really good at what you do. So I never felt big me, little you. While I think you have to have some deference, right? Like this is your boss. This is the head of the department. You're not gonna, you know, maybe say all the things, right? But I never felt like I couldn't be myself. And that is probably why I was really good at my job and also why people would be so upset about it. It's like I would be hired to do this thing, right? So I'm usually hired when people are not doing well and they need things to either be shaken up, they need a new vision, They need somebody with guts to get in there and change the course of things. And so that's usually when I'm hired, right? So I'm like, okay, cool, because I can do that. I can come in and be like, okay, this is working. This is not working. Let's try this differently. Have you guys done this before? And I have lots of ideas and I come in and I'm really, really good at my job. But then I'll have a boss who somehow they put me under this person who's not really, really good at what she does typically, right? If you don't have the kind of boss who is like, Razzlin is great, let her go. I'm happy she can do this because I really don't even want to do it. It makes my job easier. If I don't have that person, if I have, oh, everybody thinks she's so nice and everybody likes her outfit, then I'm going to have to fight this person. And they would want to be my friend while they were sabotaging me, right? So they'd be like, let's go hang out on the weekend. And I'm literally like, you literally just threw me under the bus and tried to, you know, get me kicked up. And now you want to like call me at 8 o'clock at night like we're friends. Like it was just this weird thing, right? But it never occurred to me. No one ever said to me that being really good at your job was a bad thing. Yeah. I never knew that. Why did I go to college then?
I mean, in corporate, I was the teacher's pet for like the first 6 months. And then it was like this moment of, oh shit, this person could take my job.
And I wanted their job.
That's I did. Right. I'm like, I do not want your job. I actually had to say that to a boss one time. I'm like, I am not trying to take your job. I don't want it. And just things would go left like after 6 months. And after so many times, I'm like, is this me? Well, of course it's me because I'm not meant to thrive under someone who is trying to sabotage me or is not secure in themselves or their own identity to be able to tout me. I was the leader. My whole role as a leader, a people leader, was to make sure they were not only okay every day, I would be like, what do I need to remove so you can move freely? And one of my really good leaders at one point in my career said, Amy, you need someone to believe in you and that can see what you can do and let you fly.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing. Like I had that when I was at Target, I mean, was put on corrective action so many times, it was crazy, but I always got off of it because they were just being bitches. And so I get moved from communications, which they had to apologize to me for how bad they treated me. And the VP at the time called me and was like, I'm so embarrassed. She was just coming in. She was like, I've heard what they have done. And I mean, the project that I worked on, like I had gotten all these kudos, like I had them doing media they'd never even heard of or thought of. They were on like national radio interviews and funny, you know, things that really helped to make the event amazing. And she called me and was like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm really sorry, but I'm going to help you. So they moved me to another department called events, which is basically publicity, but it's doing things to get in the newspaper. So red carpet events or just crazy outlandish, you know, build outs and things so that the New York Times will cover it or the Wall Street Journal will cover it. So it's just another form of publicity or public relations, right? But it's through fun and experiences and whimsy and all these things, which I was good at. And I had another terrible girl who thought she was amazing, but she was dusty. Anyway, she tried to bother me again, but she ended up getting moved out because the new director came in and he didn't like her. Whatever happened between them not getting along, she gets moved. Now I report directly to the director, this guy, and he's apparently been told I'm, you know, a terrible employee or whatever the case may be. So he's coming to meetings with me and I'm thinking he, as the director, he's just trying to learn things, but I ended up finding out he's trying to assess if I need to still be on the team. He pulls me aside. He said, you are the smartest person on this team. He said, you're just brilliant. You're just great. We had a great relationship. He puts this other woman in between us. She's great. We do this big project. It's amazing. Then I'm like, okay, I can finally relax. I have people who are not intimidated by me. They see my light. People are always like, you're just a breath of fresh air. And, you know, I'm happy and, you know, I just have this whatever. So they decide to put this other woman between me and Elizabeth now. So now there's this other. She's a bully, insecure. She has all the other girls crying. Everybody's upset. She's so mean. I mean, I wasn't crying, but she was starting to try to bully me. And I went to the two people who saw my light, who gave me a promotion, gave me what I was due because I was making less than people two rungs lower than me because Black woman. And they wouldn't protect me. They allowed her to continue to bully me. That was such a blow for me. Because, I mean, the project we did, nobody thought we could do it. No one thought it was going to work out. It was fabulous. I mean, I had to move my son and my family to LA for 2 weeks so we could shoot this stuff and do all these things. Like, I mean, it was, we were really like in it. And it was like, would I just be coming here to complain about this woman if she really wasn't doing things to bother me? Like, she put me under corrective action because we were in a meeting and we were talking about they were trying to do more things for Black women. And I'm the only Black woman in there. And literally the demographic was me. Like, I mean, everything was me. So someone asked me, you know, what do you think about this event? And I was like, I mean, I don't think it's going to get the return on investment that you're looking for, but I'm sure you could get like beautiful footage and people would think it looked like a cool event, but I don't think you're going to like sell things at this event. And so my boss, the bully, pulls me aside in a conference room and says, you know, when you talk in meetings, it intimidates other people and you're really using your opinion as facts. I said, she asked me my opinion and the facts are I am your demographic. You don't even know anybody else who's that demographic besides me. Like there's no one else in any of these departments that is that but me. I said, and she asked my opinion and I gave it to her. She put me under corrective action and told me that from now on, when I speak in a meeting, I have to preface it with as a focus group of one. I never even heard that saying. I didn't even know what that was. I said, well, what the hell does that even mean? So she said, so for example, if you're going to say, you know, Amy's glasses are very in style and the green and burgundy are the new colors for the season, I'd have to say, as a focus group of one, Amy's glasses are on trend with the colors of the season. And when I tell you that I, as a focus group of one, them to death, that people would say, okay, Raslyn, why do you keep saying that? You know, and I'd say, ask Melissa, ask her why I have to say that. And that's the kind of stuff that, why would somebody feel like they can't talk in a meeting because I said I don't like something or whatever, then they should say they like it or don't like it or whatever. Like, I don't care. I go home to love and happiness. My love and happiness is not here. So let's just get this work done. Try to have a few laughs. But like, I don't live for this. This pays for me to live. And I think that that was really hard for me because I think my parents went through the same things. You know, my parents were 30 when they had me. I'm 45. So for them to see, like, you're still having the same problems we fought for. You're still having these same things. After we sent you to private school, you went to the best colleges, you have an international degree. We did all these things. And they're still bothering you. And that was just a real hard place, I think, to be. And then I realized there were a million of me going through this stuff at work, a million Black women. And I've been spending a lot of time these past few years trying to figure out, like, yes, what you said is right. It's rooted in white supremacy and, you know, misogyny and all these things. Yes. But I feel like the main problem that I have is that how I was raised was to defend myself and nip things in the bud. So if I was playing outside, as you can see by my wallpaper, I'm in my parents' home, right? So if I played outside and somebody was trying to bully me, I couldn't come run in here crying. My mom would be like, you better handle that or they're going to bully you for the rest of your life. Get your butt out there and fight the girl or bust the girl out. But I couldn't just be, she's trying to fight me. My mom would be like, okay, Ann, bye. Go out there and handle that. Don't come in here. What am I going to do? Because then if I intervene, the next time you're outside, she's going to try to fight you again. And when you're over there at the park and you can't get to me, you're going to have to fight the girl. So just go in and fight the girl. So you get raised this way. And a lot of women I know are raised this way, right? Even like your cousins and people around you, they get smart, you get smart back. And then it's over with. And we're all overeating and we're all playing outside. You say what you got to say. I say what I got to say. We might tussle, but then it's over with, right? Then the first time you can't do that, you're in corporate America, you can't even defend yourself, or you're an angry Black woman, you're not a team player, you don't fit in the culture. So I started asking my internal clients, have you ever been in a fight? And most of them were all white, all of them were white for the most part. And they'd say, no, I've never. I said, you've never been in a physical fight ever? No. Have you ever been in a verbal altercation where you just had to cuss somebody out? No. No, I can't even tell my husband to shut up. I mean, I would never do that. And I'm like, what? And so I feel like it has a lot to do with how we view conflict. If you're raised in a culture that says somebody comes at you, you come at them back. Like, you don't let somebody do you like that. Versus a culture that avoids conflict, that goes out of their way not to have those conversations because that's uncomfortable. We want to avoid that. And we're taught it might be uncomfortable, but you're going to have to get it over with. So go on and get it done. So how do you reconcile that? Now you're an adult and you can't defend yourself. You can't say, no, actually, that's a lie. I did do that. And then now you're not taking accountability for feedback. I mean, it was just all these mind games coming from a culture that was like, we don't play any games. Like, this is what it is.
For me in the workplace, I found safety and familiarity. For me, as a white woman, I've not been in a fight, but I was physically abused my whole life as a child. And so for me, it was like, I was so comfortable being like, I almost, when someone would come at me, I would cower, like to try to keep myself safe. So that was where my lived experience, it was like, when someone would make me feel less than in the workplace, that felt familiar. And that's what I beautifully have been healing and breaking through, is finding that part of me where I can be safe and stand up for what I truly believe. And that's where I'm at these days, between my warrior and my healer. And I'm finally in a space in my life where, for the first time ever, I'm physically, emotionally, and psychologically safe, which is, again, the first time at 42. So that's what was interesting for me, the difference. I really appreciate your sharing experience too, because you got to check all of that, whether my experience or yours, like, you got to check it at the door. You're expected to.
Yes, I understand where you're coming from. And I can see that. In my family, you're not allowed to bully people. You weren't allowed, not allowed. Okay, you would get a whooping. Like, your whole family would knock you out. Like, you couldn't bully other kids. You could, like, you, okay, so we're coming from a place, let's just say my family, I could speak for it, where we don't bully. You don't do that. You can make fun of people all day long. Like, I mean, that's part of life, right? But you cannot, like, bully somebody. And so it didn't occur to me that I would be an adult in the workplace and someone would be trying to punk me. And in a way the way that it was done was because they knew no one would protect me against them. Now, if it had been another Black woman bothering me or Black man bothering me, I might have had some leverage without documentation, right? Mm. But if a white woman is saying, Raslyn intimidates me, Raslyn yelled at me. And one thing about me, if you have noticed, I'm super monotone. That's what people tease me about, because happy, mad, or sad, cracking a joke, this is it. This is as far as we're going here.
Yeah.
You know, like, I may cackle, you know, something's really funny, but for the most part, like, this is it, right? So I'd be like, yelled at you? Like, where did that even come from? You know? And I think that they knew that if they said something about me, they would protect them because they were this white woman who deserved this protection, but for my documentation. And honestly, their stupidity, because they would often feel so self-righteous in the things that they did. They obviously were talking in echo chambers where somebody told them that what they were about to do to me or had done to me was okay. But once I'd be like, okay, well, I'm just going to call HR. And then I'd have this HR person here. I just kick it all the way up to the directors and the VPs, because I'm not doing this stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's so many layers that they get to hide.
Yeah.
And HR and I would be in the room with my boss and me and this, the HR person. HR would be looking at my boss like they were crazy. It never failed. They always had to have coaching. They always needed leadership training, or they had to apologize to me. I mean, I had one woman pull me aside and tell me there had been this tornado. This is when I still lived in Minneapolis. There was a tornado here. We didn't have power for a while. So there were days where I just, you know, worked from home because I'm like, I can't even set my alarm. I can't even, you know, do anything. And there were people on the news, and I live in, you know, in a Black neighborhood. So people were on the news talking about what had happened. And my boss pulls me aside and she says, you know, Raslyn, I don't know why you live in that side of town. I was like, I was born on that side of town. It's my neighborhood. Like, I know these people. She said, you know, there's all these shootings and stuff like that. You know, don't you care about your son? And then she says, I was watching the news, you know, after the tornado, and there were girls named like Laquita and, you know, whatever. She was like, you don't even fit that. Like, you make enough money to live somewhere else. And she ended up using that as a basis for trying to put me on an action plan because she said, since she didn't trust my personal decisions, that she doesn't trust the decisions I would make at work. That's the kind of stuff like these girls were doing to me. And so I was like, that's none of your fucking business where I live. And we're on our way to HR because I know this is crazy. And I said, so where should I live? On the white side of town where all the meth is and all the kids are getting abused. And, you know, so my son can be called the N-word at recess. Like, I mean, what are you doing? I used to just be like in this place where I was like, I'm ready to go for bad. I'm not going to just keep letting you punk me like this. Like, I might let you get away with a few things because I'm like, whatever. But once you really try to keep messing with me and just keep poking, 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 my mother used to say, if you mess with me, you better bring a lunch because we're going to be here all day. And that's what I used to tell them. I hope you have a lunch because you mess with me, we're going to be here all day. Because I don't bother people. I'm literally here to do my job, crack a few jokes, and go to where I really want to be with my friends and family and my man. It's like, I don't want to be here. Like, I'm supposed to be a kept woman, but I'm working by default, right? So, you know, people are like, you're so ambitious. Actually, I'm not. I want to stay at home and go shopping. I do not want to be here. You know, I'm ambitious because I'm here. I have to do this job. And it's not even ambition. It's just like, if you're going to do something with your name on it, it should be something you're proud of, right? It should be like the highest level of work possible. And that's really how I looked at it. But I never wanted to be this career person. So I think that was such a hard thing for me. People seeing me as this ambitious person who might want to take their job, who they have to be mean to. And meanwhile, I'm like, I'm trying to make sure my man gets enough money so I never have to come in here again.
So many things that you said resonated. And I watched myself shift from wanting all the titles and money and like the big, because I thought that would make me valuable. Coming from a place where my whole life worth and value was only money. And so it was like, well, let me go get this big job and get this big money. And that'll give me worth and value. When it started to shift, when I was probably 35, it started to shift toward, wait a second. I'm the magic. I'm the value.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's me. What? And then, as you can imagine, when I was surrounded in the corporate world with people who I used to feel familiar with, who were insecure, I was like, whoa, nothing felt familiar. And I realized how I had been in ways perpetuating the systems, not even recognizing what was going on around me. And then awakening to that, it was jarring. It was scary. It was like, oh, wow. What am I going to do now? And it took me another 7 years to actually like get to the point where I'm like, today's my last day. So I love that you and I, having very different lived experiences, of course, because no matter what I've experienced, like including always being told to straighten your hair because it's not natural to wear it curly.
They said it's not professional.
It's not professional. And me being told that still isn't a fraction of what Black women have experienced with their hair. So now we're out here in the wild on our own.
In the wild.
Beautifully. And we help individuals that, or at least I'll speak for myself. I guide other women to give space to allow, who are you? What do you want to do? But back to who are you without anyone else's perception. And a lot of times we're digging through all of that lived experience, upbringing, conditioning, because we all learned something along the way. And do you want to keep that or do you want to unlearn it? You know, that kind of stuff. So tell me about JobMinder 365 and Notable. I want to hear about the moves you're excited to be making.
So when I stopped working at corporate, I sued my company. So I sued Invesco in federal court and I won over $1 million. I would have gotten more, but there was like this technicality that whatever. But I won. I beat them in federal court in Texas with a Republican federal judge. And the jury was all white except for one Black woman who had to disclose that she went to the same hair shop as the attorney on the other side. It was just a mess. But anyway, I won. But it was very stressful. But during that time, I was going to write a book because when I had been at Target and U.S. Bank, which U.S. Bank, I will say, was a good experience. So I have nothing to say negative about them at all. But I started to become like this underground railroad for women under corrective action or who were having problems in corporate because I could write an action plan. I got off every action plan. They can't keep me on corrective. They've tried, but it's not my performance. It's you being an asshole. It's not my performance. I do fit into the culture. I do have friends here at work. People do like to work with me. You're just an asshole. That doesn't mean there aren't things I needed to work on as a person or as a professional, but with the things that they did were just egregious, right? So I started to help women. And as a matter of fact, very funny, right before I came back to the United States, I got a call from a woman that was under corrective action at Target for nonsense. And she was in this group talking and she said, the people I thought were going to be there for me weren't. And she said, you know, does anyone know Raslyn? And my mom's name is Anna Mae. And my mom was like an HR person for years and personnel. And she said, they came to my house with food, computer. They helped me write my plans. And she said, I was just a mess. But the people she expected, I mean, not that we weren't cool, but we weren't as close as other people. Because I know what it feels like when you're going through it. So I don't charge people to help them. I just did. But I was going to write this book and I was like, this is so overwhelming. And I knew I was going to have to go to court. So I didn't want to put something out there that would be misconstrued or the jury would be like, she hates white people at work or something stupid. And so I just didn't do it. Once I was done, I was like, I just don't have a book in me. Like, I just can't. So I started this, what was supposed to be a blog of me talking. So I started saying, well, I'll interview people because as a publicist, what would happen to me is I would obviously become friends with journalists and I have lots of friends that are journalists. And they say, well, we can't find Black women to talk about these things. We can't find subject matter experts who are Black. Well, and I'm like, how come I know all these professional Black women that'll talk? And I realized nobody's calling Black women for their expertise. No one's asking them. No one's even, you know, thinking of them for the amazing things that they've done in different industries for companies. And no one is really talking about, like you said, like you do on LinkedIn, what really it feels like in corporate America. There's these people like, you got to do this. And if he has five ways as a Black woman, come on, man, that stuff isn't helping us. And you know it, right? I mean, I hope you sell 1 million books, but let's just be clear here. It doesn't help. It doesn't work. And it's very painful. And Black women, a lot of us are the breadwinners. If we go down, this whole family goes down, right? So I just started interviewing Black women. I would find people who were experts in this or had gone through that or whatever. I just said, okay, look, this is also very stressful. So I only do it 4 times a year. That's because afterwards I'm sad. I'm distraught. Like, I mean, I've had one woman I interviewed. She was being bullied. She was being mobbed at work, which is just a whole nother form of bullying that I just can't even get. And she just passed out at work. She just kept passing out. That's how stressed out she was. And they put her on FMLA. So Notable is this magazine for Black women. It's a career lifestyle magazine. Are your clothes stopping you from having the career you want to, you know, workplace trauma, how to deal with that, how to fight back from the bullies? How do you even know you're being bullied? Retirement, you know, once I found out that the average Black woman retires with only $11,000 to her name, I really was like, okay, how do I talk about retirement? And I had a couple women send me notes saying, I'm so embarrassed. I'm too embarrassed to even tell my kids how little money I have in retirement. And thank you for this article because I really need to just talk to my kids, you know? I really need to kind of try to make a plan of what I'm going to do. So I try to, talk about the things that I think Black women need to hear. And the first issue I did was about discrimination. And it focused on, are you being discriminated against or are you just a bad performer? Because sometimes it's you, be honest, right? Sometimes it's you. You're not being discriminated against. You just have missed four deadlines, okay? So it's that kind of stuff. And I felt like I really couldn't do this magazine without getting that out of the way. Not that it's not a reoccurring thing, but pretending like discrimination isn't something that plagues our ability to be successful in the workplace would be an egregious error. So I did that. And then part of my helping women when they're on corrective action is like helping them get their documentation, or even before they're on corrective action, if they feel like things aren't going right, well, let's look at your performance reviews for the last 3 years or whatever. Let me show you how to document. And, even for myself, after a while, like if you've been at a job for 3 years, do you know how many folders of documentation you have? Like, and even when I was going to court, we submitted for the courts, you have to give everything. And I think I had like thousands of documents and they only submitted like 400. So imagine if I didn't have what I had and I got kicked out of the system, I would have had to rely on the documents they had, which I would have lost my case. I made it past summary judgment with their documentation. So I figured, how do I help people see that documentation isn't just when you're in trouble? Like it's just too late now. Like you're doing all kinds of nonsense, right? Because I couldn't even find things. I'd be like, where's that email Amy sent me about such and such where she, got smart with me? Well, I realized it was within a thread of something else. So I'm trying to name it what we were talking about, but it was in the thread about, hey, let's go to lunch on Wednesday. So I had to figure out how do I rename these emails or these documents or these conversations so I can find them again. And so I just created this system, which was really difficult to do. And I turned it into the app, JobMinder 365. And I called it that because when I started out, I had a mentor that said, minding your business is a full-time job. Your career is your responsibility. They will lie on you. They will not promote you. They won't see your value. You have to decide, are you staying here? Are you going? Are you going to fight? Are you going to retreat? What's best for you? But minding your business is a full-time job 365 days a year. You're thinking about your job, whether you're there or not. Even on the weekend when you're supposed to be with your kids, you're thinking about something at work. And so I called it JobMinder because I want people to see that it's your job to mind. It's your firsthand account of what you're going through, what this project meant to you, what you're experiencing. There's a tab for wellness so you can start documenting how you're feeling mentally and physically so you can kind of gut check. Because I'm sure you know, like I know, when you're going through it, you're too busy to really feel like to understand what your body is going through. You look up, you can't button your pants, or your hair is falling out, or you haven't been sleeping, now you have insomnia. It's just constantly, you're talking about it all the time. Guess what they did today? I give a shout out to my friends, Shay and April. I mean, I'm sure I talked them to death about these things when I was in, and they just, girl, yeah, girl, They were so loving to me when I know they were so tired of my conversations about it, but it overtakes your life. So my app is a journal, but it's documentation because some of the things that saved me weren't, oh, here's a terrible thing she did, here's how she's lying, but like, okay, she's saying I had bad performance, but I have these 50 emails from my internal business partner saying I'm the reason they just brought in this $200 million client because I put somebody on Bloomberg TV and he happened to watch it, never even thought of this company. And now you guys got an incoming call for $200 million worth of business. I have those kinds of things. So now what is the judge going to say? Because you don't have anyone or anything saying I'm terrible. So I want people to see, like, it's not, oh, she told me to do this, but I did this. Oh, she said this and I did. Yes. But also creating a portfolio in a brag book. What great things have you done? When you get to your performance review, you don't remember what happened in January and February, but if it's in your brag folder, you get to go and you can search. So when you sign up for the app, you populate all this information about yourself, where you work, what you do, what your title is, and then you populate the people in your work life, your boss, your HR person, your coworkers, any business partners or clients, whoever might have something to do with your job, you get to populate them in there. And then there's also prompts you to put your company employee handbook in there to attach that. Because another thing that helped me was I had a copy of the handbook. So while they're lying on the stand, my attorney's going, but in the handbook on page 152, it says actually what you did to Raslyn is outside of what you're even supposed to do here. So I prompt people, attach your employee handbook. You're going to need it, right? Because not everybody follows the handbook, but everybody's supposed to. They think you're supposed to, but everybody's supposed to. And so once you populate all this information, then you start creating these journal entries. So it could be an email. Now you have all these people in here. Did you send the email or did someone send it to you? Who was copied on the email? Then you put the date it was sent, what happened, and then you can attach the email or whatever else goes with it. It allows you to record audio and video within the app. You know, I thought of like myself, I was in my last job, I was a director. I had a door, I had a printer. I could do whatever I needed to do in order to get the things that I needed. But everybody's not like that. Some people work in an open environment. They can't even print without having to use a code, right? So I did it so you can put the email or whatever you need on your computer screen and take a picture of it. Or if it's long and you need to scroll it, video it and just scroll through like you're reading it so they can see, and it saves and you attach it. You can upload documents. If you can print things out, but maybe you have a place where you can't take stuff home, you can scan it right within the app and scan the document in. And then it's saved on the app away from the company server. So if you do need it for whatever reason, like I remember when I left Target, I didn't have a portfolio of my work, but it just so happened I'm a publicist. So all of the press releases I wrote were on the website. I could just go get the ones I wrote and show somebody, look what I did, right? But everybody's not like that. So it helps you build your portfolio as well. And also how I look at it is I think documentation is a really good tool to help you assess where you are, right? So you get to see like, am I being put on silly projects? Am I just being given busy work? Like, what am I doing? How am I feeling? And so you get to say, okay, either I'm on the right track, I might need to work a little smarter. Maybe I'm not up to par. Do I need to look for another job, ask for a promotion, or contact an attorney? But if you're not documenting, you are going to get caught out here. And really, 6 months ago, you should have been like, I need to get out of here.
Wow. So what I love about this emerging technology, JobMiner 365, and other resources out there that are emerging and helping people know what to do first. And you said this earlier, I've started to put out on LinkedIn, here's what gaslighting in the workplace can look like. Here's what mobbing in the workplace can look like. Because a lot of people, especially in my experience, didn't even realize what was happening. It was just like it was a copy paste approach to be like, oh, that's just them. That's just the way it is. It's not y'all. And we got to change it. So awareness is key first. As we start to wind down, Raslyn, where can we find you? Where can we find JobMiner 365? Where can we find Notable?
So Notable, you can find us online. It's an online magazine. It's www.notablecareersmag.com. And then also the Instagram, that's where we're the most active, is Notable Careers Mag. So at Notable Careers Mag. And then for JobMinder 365, it's available on iOS and Android. So it'll be in your Google Play Store or your Apple App Store, and it's free to download. You get 3 free journal entries so you can try it out and see if you like it. After that, I think it's like $4.99 a month or $49 for the year. And it's really me storing it for you away from your servers. And when you do need it, you just export it to your personal email address. And then you can do like I do. I'm helping someone put together their binders because they're going to have to sue. And so you have to get that stuff off. So you export it, print it out, and then I'm going to be showing someone how to organize it. And for Instagram, for JobMinder, at JobMinder365. Notable is also on LinkedIn. We get people who secretly like our stuff but don't like it, which is we understand that. We get a lot of DMs.
Yeah.
Not a lot of likes on LinkedIn because like you, we are poking the bear.
Yeah.
We are saying things that, you know, LinkedIn is a place of masks, I say.
Yeah. And every time it's interesting, I can actually I can tell when they change the algorithms as to like which content of mine gets tanked. So, closing remarks as we wrap up.
Well, I really thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to spend some time with you today and learn more about you and share a little bit about me. You know, I just want people to know that the workplace just, it doesn't have to be this way. It shouldn't be this way. But because it is, we really have to protect ourselves. And I think part of documentation and having, you know, these, you know, receipts, as we call them, it helps give you confidence. Like, you know, if you're walking in somewhere and they're saying these things about you, you don't have to show your hand. You're like, okay, that's what you're saying. Okay, good. Okay, great. Now I know where we're going and I have everything that I need. And it's just about being prepared for the good things like promotions and performance reviews. Sometimes those are great experiences. And then also being prepared when they're not. But knowing that you're not the only person who's struggling in the workplace, and there are resources, there are people who care about you, there are people trying to find ways to make this better for you, including me and you, Amy. So, you know, I think that that's maybe was our life's mission, to be abused in a way that we could now help protect people from that same abuse. I don't want anyone feeling like I did. I just happen to have the kind of parents who are like, you're going to court and we don't care if we have to sell everything. You know, I had a kind of man who was like, look, they're going to stand on, get on that stand and face you. But everybody doesn't have that. So maybe in some way my app can be that, or my magazine can be that. So, you know, you're not crazy. You're not, you know, making this up in your head, and that you're going to be okay. And if you're not, find resources to help you get through this. Don't suffer in silence. Don't suffer alone, you know.
Thank you, Raslyn.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.